If you're going to self-manage your rental properties, you know I'm a big fan of finding that proper tool to get the job done. Well, we want to tell you about Rent Ready. Rent Ready is a really awesome property management software that allows you to manage your business from your computer or phone. Collect rent online and get paid. Find that perfect tenant with their screening and listing services and get your leases signed with the click of a button. And tenants really love using Rent Ready's app too. They can pay rent using card, ACH, or cash, set up auto pay, get renter's insurance if you require it, and even build their credit score through Rent Ready's new credit reporting feature. Did we also mention that Rent Ready is unlimited and all of this is flat priced? No tricks or hidden fees. Rent Ready is designed for people to manage their own properties so you don't have to worry about paying more for building your business. You can start managing and scaling your rental properties without scaling costs. And Rent Ready has given us an amazing deal to pass on to the REI Mastermind Network. You can get Rent Ready's annual plan for only $54 at rentready.com when you use our special code MASTERMIND. That's rentready.com, R-E-N-T-R-E-D-I.com with code MASTERMIND, M-A-S-T-E-R. MIND at rentready.com to get Rent Ready's annual plan for only $54. Welcome to the REI Rookies Podcast,
the Real Estate Investing Rookies Podcast, episode number 8, where we invite you to follow us on our journey towards financial freedom using the power of real estate. I'm Josh Koth.
And I'm Jack Haas.
The mission of this podcast. Thanks for letting us repeat what we're learning to you. It helps the data stick in our feeble rookie brains that much more. A rising tide lifts all boats. We're not competitors. We're a community. Right, Jack?
That's right. And this week, we're kind of doing a surprise or bonus episode on our exit strategies.
Yes, we always talk about being nimble in this business and being able to adjust to market conditions, right? Well, when we initially set up our first four main exit strategies, wholesaling, quick flip, fix and flip, and buy and hold, which we went over in the last four episodes, during the course of that in our actual business, we realized there's another one that can be beneficial. And this kind of was born out of necessity, and that is seller financing. So that is our fifth and bonus exit strategy, seller financing. It's another way to exit a property, extract your equity, get your profits out of a property. So what is seller financing, Jack?
Well, in this strategy, we end up being the bank.
Right. So basically, seller financing is slowly selling your house instead of receiving a lump sum either in cash or from a bank if a seller gets traditional bank financing. And typically this takes two forms, what's known as a land contract or contract for deed, or a lease option or rent to own. And it's kind of a regional thing. Different states, different areas of the country call it different things. So it's really important to research what's common in your area before you decide to undertake one of these strategies. But the main gist of it is you are acting as the bank and the buyer is giving you payments and you're transferring the property to them at the end of that contract or slowly over the course of the contract, depending on which of those two methods you choose. So, why would you choose this option? What benefits are there to seller financing a property versus just selling it on the MLS or for sale by owner? Why would you ever choose seller financing as an option?
Well, in many cases, the returns are going to be much higher just because you don't have the typical costs associated with a buy and hold. For example, you're not going to have any of those repairs because that's now on the buyer. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have any of the taxes, no insurance. Tenants will actually start seeing that as themselves as the owner. So mm-hmm. you can usually get a higher down payment and you may get the benefit of seeing them do some of those repairs that you might have done in a flip type scenario.
Yep. And basically the people that are purchasing the property from you, they think like an owner. So they're going to value and respect that property more so than a typical tenant would. So you're going to have less issues as far as damage to the property because they're buying it. So why would they want to damage something they're going to eventually own outright? And even if they don't follow through the entire duration of the contract, that's still, you know, the odds are in your favor that they're going to treat the property better, even if you end up getting it back, typically, than a traditional tenant would. So that's a major advantage. And if you're looking at your monthly cash flow, that can turn a problem property into a winner just by getting rid of all those, transferring those extra expenses to the buyer. So that's some really good reasons why you would do that. And like you said, they may make improvements to the property. they may add, do some remodeling because they're the ones living in it. They want to improve it. And no tenant would typically ever do that in a buy and hold, typical landlord tenant situation. They're not going to make improvements. I mean, sometimes they'll want to paint or something like that, but typically they're not going to waste or invest their own money in a property that they're going to live in for a year and move out, right?
That's right. You know, we have one situation where we recently did this, and I know we're going to be painting this as kind of a utopian situation, but we have a great situation where a person moved into one of our properties in this type of scenario, and they've remodeled the bathroom. They're adding on a large deck to the back. Mm-hmm. They're really adding a lot of equity to the property itself.
Yeah, they're increasing that value to that. now, here's how we stumbled into the strategy, the exit strategy of seller financing. It was kind of out of necessity. We had this property that we picked up for a good price, and that's always important. You know, purchase your properties with equity already in the deal. And we had trouble finding a tenant at first. some of that was due to the neighborhood, possibly, and just vacancies are kind of at a peak right now in Fargo, North Dakota. And so there was lots of options for tenants. So our house didn't seem like a very favorable option to a traditional tenant. And then we put it on the market. We thought, well, we'll just sell it, right? You always got to be ready for any of those exit strategies. And the worst thing you can do is have a property sitting there earning no money. So we put it on the market, actually had it sold once, but then the deal fell through. We're still not sure why that happened, but for whatever reason, the buyers backed out. And so we lost another month there while that was going on. And we just really needed to make something happen. And the thought of seller financing came up just through some of our research. And one of the advantages to that from a marketing perspective is, it can be an attractive thing to people. So if you're saying, hey, we can get into a house, with typically probably less money down than they would need through a traditional bank, maybe they don't qualify for traditional financing. You're kind of servicing a population that maybe not doesn't have a ton of other options, which of course comes with its own set of risks. But we thought, well, let's just throw the bait out there and see what happens. So we put up a Craigslist ad, right? And maybe you can talk about your thoughts behind how you created that ad and what kind of response it generated.
Yeah, the ad post was pretty straightforward. It was just a test balloon. We didn't even include the address of the property, included some photos.
Interesting. That's a good point. When they were responding to this ad, all it said basically was, rent to own, why rent when you can buy. It had some of that kind of marketing, good marketing language in it, but they didn't even know where the house was when they were responding. So that tells you the amount of, desire you're creating, by setting up this opportunity. It's really an attractive opportunity if they're willing to contact you and they don't even know where the house is located.
Yeah, and I think one of the big key aspects that made it even more attractive is the monthly fee associated with it.
Right.
We really worked hard to make sure that monthly payment was going to be at or pretty darn close to the equivalent of a monthly rent payment.
Yep.
That would include the taxes, the insurance and the cost of the house itself. Mm-hmm. On top of that, this is a great situation where you can really ask for a premium for that property. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of nudge up the value of the property a little bit. And there isn't a lot of negotiation that we experienced on the buyer side.
Right, because we live in a monthly payment society, right? People don't question the price of things. They say, what's my payment going to be? You talk to people, you know, look at all the things that are sold on payments now. I mean, phones. You used to go out and buy a phone outright. I don't know. I assume you can still do that, but the cost is so exorbitant. They make it almost impossible for you to make that choice. They say, this phone is going to be X amount per month. I mean, you're probably paying way more than the phone is worth by the time it's all said and done. But because they're financing it and they're breaking it up into payments, it's a subscription model. You know, look at all the things that are sold via that model too. Razors and everything else that used to go in the store and just buy razors. Now, Dollar Shave Club and all these things. The subscription model, Netflix. People think, well, a small amount per month. You know, but once you, even on like streaming Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, all those services, when you add all those up, you're probably paying more than you were for cable. But, you know, it's an attractive way to price things. So, you know, we just decided to take advantage of that. And, you know, the overall purchase price of the property is almost secondary to what is the payment going to be per month. And if that payment is attractive and it matches what it would cost to rent the property, that's an attractive deal to most people.
Yeah. And the response we received was quite a bit more than we expected. Mm-hmm. Within a very short amount of time and only posted once, we had received a good half a dozen to a dozen correspondents just asking about the property. And once again, nobody really asking about where it's located. It was all about that monthly cost.
Yeah, they're thinking, I can own a house, purchase a house for what it's costing me to rent. And of course, that's true if they were to go get a traditional mortgage, but maybe this segment of the population, either they're too young, they don't have a credit history, they don't have enough down payment to put, you know, 20% down on a house through conventional financing. Maybe they're older and they've already used their first-time home buyer options, and maybe they had some credit issues in the past and they don't qualify for traditional financing. So, you know, it really is appealing to a certain segment of the population. And we had two offers within the first couple of days. And that was nice too, because then we kind of, you know, you set up the scarcity mode, right? You know, the marketing kicks in and you setting up a situation of, well, there's some scarcity here. You have to act or you might lose the chance to buy this house. And we were able to, you know, not through any type of manipulation or, you know, lying or anything. It was all true. It was, you know, whoever puts a down payment down first gets this property. And so when you have people competing for a property, that's a good situation as a seller to be in. So, you know, all this sounds great, right? I mean, the headaches of being a landlord are removed. We're the bank now. All they do is send us a payment and they're responsible for all repairs, upkeep, maintenance, everything else. Most of the headaches of being a landlord are removed. We're not making all these other things that can destroy your cash flow or make it hard to profit in the buy and hold situation. So with such an attractive setup, you know, why wouldn't we do this on every property? I mean, obviously, there's got to be some downsides to this, right?
Yeah, and there's quite a few. So when we talk about the downsides, it's really important to note that to make up for the downside, you have to make enough profit to justify this. Yep. So we look for a particular amount of return on our investment when we do a buy and hold, for example. It's going to be much higher when it comes to a contract for deed or seller financing type of opportunity, because we're trying to make up for that loss in the other areas. So, for example, you're kind of capped out on the equity.
Right. Now, let's just take us through an example here. Let's say a property is worth $100,000 and you're selling it for $100,000, either contract for deed or lease option. You're locking in that price. So the seller is purchasing, it's going to be $100,000. If you held that property for 10 years, rented it out, and made cash flow that whole time, during that 10-year period and you went to sell it 10 years down the road, it will have appreciated typically 2 to 5% a year. So, you know, you're sacrificing that equity that would have, or you know, that would have appreciated during that 10-year period by locking in that price. So your whatever equity you have in the deal is being locked in at that point. So you're kind of capping out there. So that's something you're sacrificing. Also, the income generated through the cash flow on these payments is taxed at a higher rate. And, you know, we're no tax professionals here, but just through some basic research, we discovered that to be the case. So plan to set aside a higher amount of that income for taxes. Also, you lose some beneficial tax deductions because you're not, well, this, and one thing we should state and clarify too is there's a big difference between a land contract or contract for deed and a lease option or rent to own strategy. They're both two legal definitions and two legal processes. So check which applies in your state, which is better. Every state has different rules, and which one, you know, applies to your situation. A lot of people have strong opinions on that. I had one gentleman tell me, you know, don't never do contract for deed. You know, then you have to foreclose on them. And, you know, foreclosure versus eviction is much tougher and takes longer. But after doing some research in, you know, in certain states, it can be just as easy as an eviction, Minnesota being one of those. Actually, like foreclosing on a contract for deed is just about the same as an eviction. Other states, it's much more difficult. It might take 6 months like a bank would. So that's something you know, it's definitely a negative versus a landlord-tenant situation. So you have to earn a much higher rate of return to justify these extra costs and extra risks and extra loss of benefits. And also you lose some of the basic tax deductions of of property ownership, right? So if you're selling contract for deed, you're sacrificing those. If you're doing a lease option, you're not, because you're still the landlord and the owner during that period, because at the end of the lease option, they have an option to purchase the property. So you still can benefit from those tax benefits of owning property. And, you know, but then also you're responsible for maintenance during that time on a lease to own, so, or a lease option. So that's something you have to just kind of take case by case and decide what's best.
Yeah, and the other thing would be any kind of loss associated with the appreciation of the property.
Yep.
So it's great if you have a great tenant who's going to do repairs and remodeling in that property. But in the end, that appreciation is going to go to the buyer of that property, and they're going to see that benefit in the long run if you have a good tenant in there.
Mm-hmm. And that's that loss of equity is something that's true in both cases, contract for deed and lease option, because you're locking in that price on the front end. So, which can be a good selling point too. And as long as you price it high enough where you're satisfied and you're making your money on the interest and it's cash flowing the whole time at a rate that compensates for all these downsides, then that can still be a great deal and something you should definitely consider as an option when you're looking at exit strategies.
And we have to remember, we're dealing with a riskier population here.
Right.
These are people who are not going to get a traditional loan. And they're looking at other avenues.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, why didn't they qualify for a bank loan? What is the problems that are present there? You know, some people just like to keep money under their mattress. They don't want to deal with banks. That's fine. We have one gentleman that just hands us stacks of cash, and that's great. You know, he's paying down the contract quickly, and that's great because we set the purchase price at a high enough where we're happy if that happens and we benefit either way. So that's fine. You know, and he just prefers cash, and you know, you never know what the issues are going to be. So that's just something, you know, it can be a riskier deal. But now let's say, okay, the contract falls through, they stop paying, you know, worst case scenario, hopefully they've taken good care of the property because they, you know, have that owner mentality. They don't want to trash a property that they're going to be owning. So hopefully they'll leave it in better condition than a typical, you know, tenant that you would have to evict would. So, you know, that's something you have to consider as well.
So with that being said, we would really encourage you to really, you know, we're really pushing this idea. Check your local laws, check your local information regarding what the best strategy is here. We are not going to be experts in your area. We would also encourage you to look into a note servicing company.
Yeah, that's crucial, because one thing you don't want to do, you're trying to step away, right, from managing and from doing the day-to-day headaches of managing and owning the property. So if you can remove yourself from one other item, which is, you know, receiving, dealing with all the payments and tracking all that, find yourself a loan servicer. And we found one called Moat Note Servicing, and they're at moatnoteservicing.com. Moat like around a castle, M-O-A-T. they handle servicing loans for this exact type of scenario. So it's just it's a setup fee per loan and a monthly cost. I think it's $35 a month. And I'll pay that all day long to not, you know, have to track all the paper that goes on and reach out to the buyers and collect payments and chase them down for money and stuff. So to me, that's money well spent.
Yeah. And if you know that in advance, the costs associated with the note servicing, it's something that you could likely bake into the monthly fee that the buyer is making to you, too. So yep, exactly. In the end, you could have this servicing company paid for without any money out of your pocket.
Right. I also found another good resource, Land Contract versus Lease to Own. We'll put the link to that in the show notes. It really goes through what are the advantages and disadvantages to both buyer and seller. So you can really kind of make that decision for yourself and do your research in your local market and see what's best. But to kind of wrap up the whole seller financing conversation, definitely have it in your toolbox. Do the research. See what is going on in your area. Talk to other people that are doing it. And, you know, if there's ways to profit as much or more than from a buy and hold or any of the other exit strategies, it's something you can definitely consider and have at the ready for a time when you may need to make a deal seem more attractive to the public and get some good results. And we were able to turn a problem property that wasn't earning any money, was costing us money and carrying costs, holding costs. We turned it into a winner real quick. So definitely something to consider.
Yeah. And you're going to be trying it on another property here too soon, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm definitely going to analyze it, you know, run the numbers on all properties we acquire. And if there's ways to, you know, whatever's the most profitable or the most beneficial to our business at the time, we'll do, right? I mean, you have to be nimble to all market conditions. So that's kind of how we evaluate deals. You got to be ready to move and change your strategy as needed.
And like we said before, when you buy that property at the right discount, all of our strategies would work. Mm-hmm. It's the one that we adapt to the market conditions and work with the one that provides us the best return.
Yep, either the best return as far as, you know, instant profit or profit over the long term, you know, expressed as an ROI and APR, or what is going to make something happen when nothing's happening. You know, the reason we explored seller financing is because we're having trouble finding traditional tenants for a property, and we had trouble selling it to owner occupants. So, you know, it just made it a much more attractive strategy, and that could be due to the neighborhood that the property's in. It could just be all kinds of different conditions. You never know. So the point is just to be ready to be nimble and change strategies as needed.
So a couple of the things that we're still trying to dial in here is we're adjusting the down payment. We're still trying to determine where we're going to fall on some of that. You want it to be attractive, but you want to make sure that the buyer has enough meat in the game for them to see their ownership. Mm-hmm. The other thing is the interest rate we charge. That's going to vary too now as interest rates are changing just in the industry.
Yep, and buyers, that's another thing. Again, they're concerned about the monthly payment. The interest rate is almost secondary or not even a consideration. It's verging on irrelevant. As long as the payment is close to what they're paying in rent or is doable for them, you could charge 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12%. And who knows if they would even question that. I think we just went a couple points, 2 or 3 points above what traditional mortgages were, just to kind of be in the ballpark. And honestly, it was, you know, kind of arbitrary. But we thought, well, we can always push that, and you can push the purchase price and the interest rate. Those are the two items you can push without them questioning. As long as that payment is in line with rent, what the rent would be on the property, that's going to be where you want to be. Do your own research, figure out what's best in your market, and just have it in your toolbox. That's all we can say, really.
So with that, let's move on. Josh, you're, what, week 4 or 5 into the great experiment of full-time real estate? How's it going?
Oh, great. Yep, it's going really well. Actually, we just purchased another property as a result of me working full-time in the business a few days a week here. And this ties nicely into our lesson of the week, our real estate investing specific lesson of the week. And what I have here is, be coiled like a cobra, be ready to strike. And this is something that, you know, it's one of the advantages of working full-time in the business is I'm ready to pounce and ready to strike on deals. And you have to be quick. You have to be responsive. So this particular property is one I tried to look at a few weeks ago and couldn't even get in it. The tenant was very resistant, angry, mad. They wouldn't let us and the agent even look inside because they were just problem tenants. So I kind of chalked that one off the list. I try not to bid on properties unless I've seen the inside. And then it was sold anyways. So I thought, well, we missed out on that one. Too bad. And then, you know, we're on several auto email lists. So we see pretty much every property that hits the market here in town, whether it's Craigslist or through the MLS or a variety of other sources. And I saw that property come back up as back on the market. So I texted the gentleman. I happen to know the owner too, and texted him and said, what's up with this property? I thought it was sold. And he said, oh yeah, the buyers had an issue with financing and we couldn't come together. So, and I said, well, let's talk, because oftentimes you'll find when a deal falls through, a seller is much more willing to negotiate with you. Because they just went through a bad experience. You know, the worst case scenario for a seller is a deal not to happen, not to close, right? And this gentleman was transferring some equity into another property, so it was in his best interest to have a deal close quickly. So we're able to do that, you know, with bringing cash in. We're able to talk him down some more in price, just because of our ability to close quickly. So he was actually able to close around the same time as he would have with the previous sellers or previous buyers, I should say, you know, and basically lose no time. He just had to sacrifice a little bit more equity for that convenience. So I guess the lesson there is, you know, if you see, don't wait around. If you see a deal and you can make it happen, get in there before someone else and lock it up.
Yeah. If those numbers work, take action.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So going on to Coach's Corner, this one is my suggestion this week. As we've been working on the podcast and our own other company, which is Valley Property Partners, if we haven't said that up until now, we've been spending a lot of time on the internet, marketing and doing some work there. So I really suggest something that can be universal for any industry, really, and it's called Crush It by Gary Vaynerchuk.
Gary Vaynerchuk.
You might even hear people call him just Gary V.
That's probably because they can't pronounce his last name either, right?
Right. So Gary is a very blunt individual, to say the least, but it's very straightforward, easy to read, and a lot of information crammed into this book called Crush It. Mm-hmm. And it focuses on entrepreneurial dreams and how to make them come true and that marketing effort that's needed on the internet. Some of the stuff that he lays out in this book, I'm going to be I'm going to be blunt in saying that it may not be something that you are going to have the time for, because he focuses all his efforts into this online marketing. But there are a lot of great takeaways mm-hmm. associated with this book and things to keep in mind as we're dealing with a younger and younger population who are used to companies like Zappos and things where you're getting a lot more hands-on and direct response.
Yep. Yeah, and Gary Vee, he's just a crazy consistent content producer. He does a daily vlog where he's got video content up every day, and it's all really, really good nuggets of stuff. And, you know, he's really passionate, and he's not, you know, you need earmuffs sometimes if you're afraid of some profanity, because it's one thing he does is it's a very conscious decision on his part. He'll use profanity as a way to get people to turn their heads and, whoa, what was that? You know, he'll just drop the F-bomb on you just to get you to pay attention kind of and shock you into listening.
Yep, it's a lot of great content. Highly recommended.
Excellent. All right. So that kind of wraps up our Coach's Corner, our personal development tip of the week. Check out Crush It by Gary Vee, Gary Vaynerchuk. We'll put the link in the show notes.
Please provide us some feedback. We want to know how we're doing audio, even if it's just audio quality. If you want to hear any specific topics, you can shoot us an email through the website, hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, or we have the comments on the podcast or on our blog itself. So let us know.
Yes, and if you like what you're hearing, please head over to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It really helps us help out other rookie investors out there. So remember, get off the bench
and get into the game.
We'll see you next time. Welcome to the REI Rookies Podcast, the real estate...
I always started off, so yeah. So I thought I was going to take it from there this time.
Dang it. Let's try that again.
Welcome to the REI Rookies Podcast.
You sounded like Martin Lawrence in Bad Boys 2.
Welcome. Welcome to the REI's Rookies Podcast.
He said REI's. Just do it.
Welcome to the REI's Rookies Podcast. Welcome to the REI Rookie Podcast. That's right. No. Rookies.
You made it singular. You made rookie singular.
Okay. So... Well, we're the one who, we
yeah,
we end up being the bank. So delete all that.